On the show today, we have Santique's very own Al Pasquale. He is here talking about a resurgence of check fraud. Yes, check fraud. Who knew that was still a thing? And its impact on financial services today, because according to Al, this stuff is not going away. So yeah, really, really interesting stuff here from Al, so I hope you check it out. Welcome to our show. And on today's program, we have Santique's very own Al Pasquale. Al, how are you, sir? Good to see you.
Oh, I'm doing great. How about you, Mike?
I'm doing great, doing great. Happy holidays to you and yours. And can't believe 2023 is already like right here on our doorstep. And it seems like yesterday was 4th of July, but here we are. Here we are. And today we're talking about the resurgence of check fraud and its impact on the financial services industry. And I was blown away when you sent me an email and said, hey, can we do something on this? I'm like, sure. But I didn't know it was still a thing. But before we get into that, though, give us a quick backgrounder on you, Al, because you have a very interesting background in this area.
Yeah, you know, I've been in the financial services fraud and security space for quite a while. Mm-hmm. I got started in mortgage fraud. HSBC, and then I moved to Goldman Sachs. And then for several years, I was at FIS where I worked check fraud cases.
Gotcha.
And this is, you know, mid-2000s or so. And even at that time, you know, checks were kind of on their way out, right? Mm-hmm. And from then, I went to Javelin, and I ended up as head of fraud security there, right?
Okay.
And now, I started a company in 2019 that got acquired by Sontiq, that got acquired by TransUnion. So Beautiful. It's just, it's been quite a ride.
I bet. Well, an adventure every day for sure, especially in this area where there's just something new every day. So getting back to check fraud, and my whole thing is when I first saw this, I went, all right, is this still a thing? I thought people stopped writing checks a few years ago. So what's going on here? Just lay the kind of the foundation for us on what's going on here with check fraud, this resurgence, if you will.
Yeah. So I think the easiest way to think about it is, you know, fraudsters don't get real jobs. Okay. Yeah. So when the money starts to dry up, right, it's not as though, you know, they start looking for places they can put in, you know, their application and spiff up their LinkedIn resume.
Right.
Right. So instead, you know, they're trying to figure out ways to get paid. And we just had this huge, I mean, just record-breaking surge of fraud from benefits fraud. Okay. Not just the old fraudsters who have been there forever, but we've taught like a whole new generation of fraudsters how to get rich mm-hmm. off of fraud.
Yeah.
And as those doors closed and those hundreds of billions of dollars disappeared, they had to figure out a way to continue to do what they did, right? Because they don't want to get a job like you and I. Yeah. And that is ultimately what's led to a resurgence in check fraud.
Okay.
There's some things happening behind the scenes that are making it possible, some of which are pretty unfortunate. But the fact of the matter is, it's really a demand issue. Right. Criminals, you know, looking for ways to make more money.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's out there for sure. So what types of challenges is it posing for the financial services industry, this check fraud? Because I mean, I keep going back to like, gosh, you know, not many people are writing checks anymore, but it's still a corporate thing. Corporations are still writing checks and things like that. So I think that's kind of where we're going here. So give me a shout. I mean, give me kind of a 411 on some of the challenges that this is posing the financial mm-hmm. services industry.
Well, I think, you know, there's three challenges, and I know we're going to talk about one a little bit later, so I'll stay focused on sure. the first two here. So the one is that fraudsters are getting real checks. So it used to be that, you know, you would print your own if you're a fraudster. And I've seen, you know, plenty of hundreds, thousands of examples of, you know, self-printed checks, you know being used to check cashing and at merchants.
Yeah,
that's not happening as much today. And a lot of what we're seeing are stolen legitimate checks that were written by businesses and even written by consumers to pay their bills that are getting grabbed right out of the mail. So they're getting keys to the mailboxes. They're going into the mailboxes. They're taking everything. And they're either using them or they're selling them online. You know, we've seen cases recently where actual postal employees have been involved and they're passing these checks on to fraudsters. And, you know, that makes things more difficult because if you're trying to detect visually whether or not you have a legitimate check in front of you.
Right.
It is. I mean, it's a real check. It's just that it's been altered, you know, probably dipped in, it can be dipped in like brake fluid to remove the ink and be rewritten. But, you know, the micro line is right. You know, the micro print's going to be right. It's going to match up. And so visual detection, very, very hard.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think, you know, the second issue has to do with account opening problems,
okay.
right, or challenges that the industry is facing. And so, we've all been struggling, at least banks have all been struggling, and credit unions certainly, with mule activity, right? Mm-hmm. Where members are being enticed to allow transactions through their account, criminal transactions. And, you know, at the end of the day, it's really for the criminal, not so much for the members. The member may get a cut and ultimately they're on the hook. And so, you know, that hasn't gone away. But what criminals have realized, and in these same places where they buy checks, they can get identities. Really impressive, legitimate looking identities, including identity documentation. So think like, you know, forged licenses. So they can go online, you know, buy these legitimate identities, legitimate, you know, looking identity documents and open new accounts. And they're doing this hand over fist. It's not a credit account where the credit union is highly scrutinizing the application and trying to make sure they don't just give money to someone they shouldn't. Mm-hmm. These are DDA accounts. And so the level of scrutiny is much, much lower. So you have criminals who are opening up accounts using third-party identities. They're right. Getting checks that look legitimate. And then they're just RDCing everything, right, into these accounts.
Yeah, yeah.
So, I mean, and it's bypassing all kinds of controls by virtue.
Grief. So one of the things that really stood out to me in this was, and I'm sorry to go down this little tangent here, but you've written that it can actually pit banks against each other or other banks mm-hmm. against each other. So how does that work? I'm really curious at how that works.
Yeah, it actually has to do with a change in Reg CC. So back in 2019, there was a change that basically put the onus of responsibility for mobile RDC or just RDC checks onto the depository bank.
Mm-hmm.
So it used to be when you had a paper check, you could scrutinize it. And so it created some opportunity for shared liability. But when we moved to a model an electronic model for depositing checks, that paper check's gone, right? That paper check is never put in front of, you know, the bank that is, you know, ultimately, you know, depositing the funds. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, the expectation is that bank does more due diligence. Okay.
Gotcha.
It doesn't have the original check. It should be working harder to verify that the check's legitimate. And if it's not, well, that's on them. Right. And so it's not the paying bank's fault because the paying bank, you know, had an original check. The depository bank should have figured it out. Mm-hmm, and so as a result of that change, I mean, it's put a lot more pressure on depository institutions or the depositing institution. You know, when it comes to these checks, so they're waiting like months to get money back on bad checks.
Oh my gosh!
From the paying banks, when it used to be that, you know, they would get paid right away, and, you know, that's creating friction.
Yeah, no, I can totally see that. I get it now, especially with the remote deposit capture aspect of it. Yeah, so let's get to how financial institutions, credit unions in this case, how can they combat check fraud or this type of check fraud that's going on right now? Because you said this is a big challenge right now, especially to really kind of get down to the brass tacks here and really actually, you know, combat it, defend it. I mean, or not defend it, but, you know, keep it at bay, if you will.
Yeah. So I think credit unions they've had opportunities for decades, really, now, because we're talking about check fraud, right?
Yeah. So, it's been around forever.
Yeah, so I think there's some kind of, let's call them old school mm-hmm. ways to manage the risk. You know, so they can certainly take advantage of, you know, consortium based solutions. And so there are large, you know, processors out there. You know, I used to work for one. You know, there's at least one other that have massive databases, you know, of checks and see a ton of check activity, and they can tell you mm-hmm. right, and just looking at the information from that check, you know, whether or not there's the potential for fraud. You know, there's also, I mean, obviously positive pay, right? If positive pay is in force, you know, that also, you know, potentially limits, you know, whether or not checks can be cashed. And so that kind of shifts the onus a little bit over to a credit union's, like, you know, business banking customer.
Right, right.
And they have to choose to get that. Mm-hmm. But that's another opportunity, you know, to really limit checks from being, you know, potentially altered and cashed.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I think other things, you know, good risk management, being careful with the kind of limits that the credit union is making available, especially to brand new members.
Ah, yeah, yeah.
Brand new member, you don't want to give them a $5,000, you know, MRDC limit. You know, the limit should be very low. And if you start to see check activity almost immediately, mm-hmm. you know, then I would have like a separate, you know, almost like a separate queue for what's called day two. And so it's basically an additional scrutiny for new members mm-hmm. where you're looking at the identity more closely and trying to get a real sense as to whether or not you have a problem. And so I think there are things that, you know, again, third-party providers you can rely on to give you intelligence. There's a partnership you can build with your members, mm-hmm. right? You know, providing products to them that help keep them safer and their accounts safer. Yeah. But I think also just, you know, being smart about what you're allowing those new members to do is going to go a very long way in cutting down the exposure.
Yeah, I know. I'm speaking personally from my business. Whenever I get a check, especially from like somebody who somebody brand new who I'm doing business with, and I try to remote deposit capture it, a lot of times that check won't go through. So I'll have to physically go to the branch. But then after that, then I guess maybe I don't know what they have to do. You probably know way more about this than I do. But after that, then I can remote deposit capture it. Super easy. So it might be that like that first check that they have to scrutinize. I don't know, but it's just kind of, that's been a kind of a pattern here. And I totally get it because like you said, remote deposit capture, I mean, I don't want to say it's easy to do this type of stuff, but you know, there's a trust factor involved and there's all these checks and balances, if you will. So I totally get it. And I don't have a problem with it, but after that first check, then you know, the next one comes in or whatever, then it goes through and then it's all fine. So,
I mean, good policy for sure.
Yeah.
Right. I know that all credit unions do not do that. In fact, you know, I can't say very many at all do that. It's basically carte blanche. Yeah. You know, once you're a member, right, you get access to MRDC. In fact, it's such a competitive, space that you want to make those features available mm-hmm. because that's what, you know, gets the member sure. you know, excited and interested. Sure. And why they want, you know, to have yeah. a relationship with you is because you have all these digital capabilities. And so, you know, you want those available day one. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, if you can, you know, institute, you know, some friction, some opportunities to get a better sense as to whether or not that member, you know, has, you know, a kind of legitimate business purpose.
Yeah. yeah.
Right, working with you, and then more the better.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm okay with it because I'm in the business and I get it. But I think if you're not really, I can see how it can be frustrating for somebody for a business, like, oh, I got to go back to the branch and deal with this type of stuff. But yeah. So just a minor little personal anecdote there. So any other tips or tricks or any suggestions out there to share in this area to help credit unions out to keep this stuff, keep it at bay, if you will?
Yeah. You know, I think the one thing I would say, just kind of back to your point though about businesses, is that you know, small business owners and small businesses generally tend to use the branch more.
Mm-hmm. You know? Yeah, I can attest to that.
You know, and so, you know, digital tools like, you know, RDC or MRDC, mm-hmm. you know, are the kinds of things that, you know, reduce branch traffic, which, you know, when the member doesn't need to be in the branch, I mean, it's a win-win. They don't have to get in the car to come see you, and you know, you're not spending money servicing them. And so there is very much a fine line between, you know, your risk controls and, you know, ultimately, you know, making smart choices for the credit union, mm-hmm. right, in the bottom line. So I do want to be very cognizant of that, too.
Yeah.
I want to say, you know, security for security's sake. But other than that, this is not going away. It's really not going away. You know, for years, we saw check volumes decline, but check fraud kept growing. It is now, obviously, a problem all over again. And nothing is on the horizon that's going to make the stop. There's been a lot of arrests by postal inspectors, but in reality, this is just too easy.
Yeah,
there are too many checks to be had. There's just too many credit unions, you know, and other financial institutions to target. And so this is all about vigilance.
It's probably too easy. They know how easy it is as well. So because. Yeah, we got, you know, we're focusing in other areas as well. So, I mean, it sounds like the folks out there who are combating this are spread really thin. So, and then they're like, check fraud? What? I thought that was a 90s thing, you know?
That's the movie, right? Catch Me If You Can. I mean, it's talking about Pan Am days, mm-hmm. you know, here. So you've... It's been around a long time.
Yep. Everything old is new again, for sure. So, and you kind of answered my last question here is, do you see this trend continuing in 2023? But based on what you just last said in your last response, it sounds like it's going to continue and at a breakneck pace as well. So
do you see that happening? 100%. 2023, 2024, you know, maybe 2025. I guess it depends on what happens with, you know, P2P payments. Cause I think, you know, that can go one way or another here in the next year or so. But Yeah, this is, it's imminently solvable, Mike. And it's just a question of, you know, applying some effort.
Yeah, agreed. All right. Well, Al, thank you so much for this. I mean, it's this is something, again, like you said, you know, this has been around for quite a while, obviously, but who knew that there was a resurgence of it? I mean, I'm sure folks in the credit unions or in a bank know all too well about the resurgence, but it's great to have that kind of reminder that, hey, this is still happening, and the possibility of it getting worse is there as well. So yeah, so good to know. Always good to have this type of information. And I'm always of the mind that you can never have too much of this stuff, you know. So all this, so great stuff here. Anything else to add to wrap up, Al?
No, other than that, there are real people on the other side of this too. So it's not just the folks who work for the credit union, right? It's not just the you know, the executives at, you know, large financial institutions. I mean, at the end of the day, you know, those checks belong to somebody.
Exactly. Yeah. There's people and businesses behind these checks that are
a member experience issue, Mike, right? There's a member experience issue here too. So, you know, all in all, I encourage people to take it seriously.
I agree. All right, Al. Well, thank you so much for all this great information. Can't wait to get this one posted. And look forward to another visit. This is great stuff here. Thank you very much.
Sounds great, Mike. Happy holidays.
And you as well, sir. Thank you.